Okay. We're staying with the topic of air pollution, but we're changing it slightly as we welcome Dr. Mark Weisskopf to the show. How you doing, Dr. Weisskopf?
Very good. Thank you.
And we're going to talk a little bit about how air pollution may affect the nervous system. And when we talk about the nervous system, we're talking, are we talking about peripheral or central? We're talking about the brain or the nervous system in general?
Well, largely our work is focusing on the brain, the central nervous system, more so than the peripheral.
Okay. So the really interesting research piece that I was forwarded was one that may show that prenatal exposure, obviously in the womb, to air pollution, the actives or the things in air pollution may precipitate autism. Can you talk about that study a little bit?
Sure. Yeah, that's right. So we basically looked at mothers in a large cohort we have at Harvard called the Nurses' Health Study 2, which is a cohort of over 100,000 medically trained women. So they're all nurses. And we essentially found out which among them had children with autism, and we used Environmental Protection Agency models of air pollutants throughout the U.S. to basically link what the level of a particular pollutant was where any given mother was during pregnancy or around the time of pregnancy, and then how likely it was that she have a kid that later goes on to develop autism.
Now, just out of curiosity, did nurses that were in this study, did they present a higher number of autistic births than the general population, or is it pretty much the same when you look at it compared to the general population?
Right, so that's a very good question. It's actually not exactly as simple as it might think to answer that. We are actually looking into that. We have to figure out sort of who the population is in terms of the total number of kids and all that sort of thing. And given that this cohort was actually originally instituted to look at the nurses themselves rather than their children,
right,
that creates a few problems for us. But we're doing that now, and it actually looks like the numbers match up very closely with what has generally been reported across the country.
Excellent. So what did you find out as far as the relationship between air pollution and autism?
So I should say that we were sort of following up on a couple of other reports that had come out using a sort of similar approach and the similar models, one out of the Bay Area in California and another in North Carolina and West Virginia. And what we basically decided to do was there are lots of pollutants that are in the air and that are modeled by the EPA. And that poses problems, since if you look at thousands of things, some things are going to look like they may have a signal. So we decided just to focus in particular on a set of 14 that those two prior studies had suggested there might be some association with autism. And really, cutting to the chase, what we found were results that were startlingly close to, in particular, the Bay Area study in California. So we found several metals that showed that the mothers who were in areas that had higher levels of these metals in the air were at higher risk of having a kid who would go on to develop autism. Diesel particulate matter and another compound called methylene chloride. But in general, the one of the most remarkable things was how consistent our results were, in particular with that earlier Bay Area study.
You know, there was a study we talked about a week or so ago that showed the 190-plus different toxic chemicals found in umbilical cord blood of moms who delivered babies over the past, I think it was year and a half. This study looked at a total cohort of about 9,000 mothers, I believe. And it's shocking, you know, and my audience is probably going to yawn now because I've said this so many times, but you know, we're looking for the silver bullet in autism, but there is no silver bullet. I think that some children have an innately strong immune system and some don't. And it's the cumulative effect of all of these things, what they're exposed to in the womb and then perhaps some things that they're exposed to once they're born. Lots of debate about this and that. But the bottom line is that there's some children that just can't stand up to the load and some children who can. And I think that's why it's so hard to put our finger on. Well, this is what's causing autism, because it's not one thing. It's an accumulation of a lot of things. What would you say to a statement like that?
Well, I think in general you're absolutely right about that, and there are two main issues. Which one is that many different things might lead to what we call autism, and the second thing is that what we call autism may actually be many different types of things. It's
right.
Clearly aberrant development of the nervous system, but those can have slightly different pictures. And in fact, autism itself is really largely a behavioral
right.
diagnosis, so
right.
it can really sort of mean different things, and you may get there by many different ways. I will say that there's no question there's a strong genetic component to autism. We haven't identified the autism gene, and it's, if anything, probably many genes, but it's also probably some interaction between genes and these different types of environmental exposures that come on top of it.
Well, interestingly enough, we did a show a week or so ago, and we talked about there is some testing being done now in moms who are getting ready to have babies that may indicate a greater risk of developing autism. And I feel like it had something to do with the IgG immune system, but also testosterone levels in women that has been implicated in putting a mother at greater risk of having a child on the spectrum, higher testosterone levels in women, because testosterone seems to be linked to some inability to clear toxins from the system. And so those two things just came out recently. One of my guests is speaking in Paris, France, I think this week, about autoimmune-like effects of some autism spectrum disorders.
Right, right. Yeah, no, that's certainly true. And immune system effects in the mother, testosterone levels in the mother during pregnancy are all things that have been sort of suggested to contribute to autism. Part of the question here is going to be, one, sort of identifying how much of an effect any of these have. And then also, of course, whether you can really be diagnostic early. You might be able to say you're kind of at higher risk,
right.
or there are some issues, but then the question is how much higher risk and how a mother is going to take that information at this stage in terms of what we know.
So let's talk about air pollution now just for a second and stay within the realm of this. Obviously, there is a linkage between a higher load of air pollution and the possibility of developing autism in children. What about other neurological disorders, Parkinson's disease, Alzheimer's disease? Is there any evidence that air pollution may not necessarily cause them, but increase the aggressiveness of these diseases?
So the distinction between those two we really haven't worked out yet. There's certainly growing interest in this area in general. I should point out that it's very different if we're talking about Alzheimer's or Parkinson's or a neurodegenerative disorder like that versus something we think may be going on in utero, partly because of how the sort of biology is being affected. So a mother who's pregnant and exposed to air pollution, that's going to get into the mother's system, and then it's got to go through that to affect the fetus. If we're talking something like Parkinson's or Alzheimer's or any, you know, cognitive function type thing in an adult, there's also the possibility not only that it gets in and gets into their circulatory system and has effects, but one thing that's creating a lot of interest now is this, what seems to be a strong possibility that some aspects of pollution can actually just go essentially right through the nasal olfactory bulb, that is through the nose and directly into the brain,
wow.
bypassing circulation altogether. And there are certainly components of air pollution that seem like they can do that, and there's some evidence suggesting that we do see sort of inflammation within the brain among people who are exposed to high levels of air pollution. So that in sort of adults and adult disorders is another way that the air pollution could have effects on the brain.
And that makes perfect sense, because right now intranasally delivered insulin is being experimented with on Alzheimer's patients because of an impaired. We know that insulin is produced in the brain on demand as needed. So that's one of the things that's really exciting right now that they're working on. But we also know that intranasally delivered hormones such as oxytocin act on the brain as opposed to ingested, sublingual, or even injected forms, which don't get past the blood-brain barrier. So it sounds to me like the Trojan horse into the brain is through the nose.
It's certainly quite possible, and as I say, it's a growing area of interest right now. And you know, there's part of the issue is that some of the things that are in air pollution are what we call ultrafine particles, or these very, very small ones, less than on the nanometer scale, and these things sort of have very different properties, and they can kind of go right through barriers that otherwise you wouldn't get through.
If you can smell something, that means that there is some amount of particle in the air that is making contact with the portion of the nose and the olfactory sensory system. Isn't that a true statement? If you can smell it, then that means we think that this smell or odor is this innocuous metaphysical effect. There's actually particles of that in the air. That's why you smell it, right?
Well, that's right, but usually the way that works is that we have receptors essentially that are outside of our nervous system that detect those things in the air, and they sort of engage other signals that then go through the brain and don't necessarily involve that particle that you are smelling going into the brain. But what we're seeing now, that some things, not everything you can smell, but some things don't just act on these receptors that stick outside the brain. They can actually either go right through them into the brain or go through other channels right into the brain.
Okay. All right, let's do this. I want to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, we're going to be talking more with Dr. Mark Weisskopf. We're going to be talking about the effects of air pollution on the nervous system. You're listening to Superhuman Radio. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Dumbbells can replace up to 55 pairs of dumbbells in the space of just one pair, and they come in all sizes to meet the needs of all lifters, as small as 2.5 to 20 pounds per hand, all the way up to 175 pounds per hand, and everything in between. Check out the new Power Block barbells that turn your Power Block dumbbells into barbells in seconds, replacing up to 45 barbells. Or try the new kettlebell handle to convert Power Block dumbbells to kettlebells. Call 800-651-1937 or click the banner ad on superhumanradio.com for a free brochure.
Superhuman Radio has the smartest and most dedicated health and fitness listeners found anywhere in the world. If you're trying to tap this market of greater than 50 million health fitness consumers, you simply can't do better than advertising on Superhuman Radio. Our sponsors tell us Superhuman Radio outperforms other forms of advertising time and time again. If you're tired of wasting valuable advertising dollars and need a new way to build your client base, go to superhumanradio.com and click on the Advertise with Us link. It just may be the best thing you have ever done for your business.
Orbit Nutrition carries over 1,000 of the hottest nutritional supplements, performance enhancers, and nutraceuticals on the planet. And now, Superhuman Radio listeners get an additional 5% off their everyday low prices by using the coupon code SHR5. That's SHR and the number 5. Choose from products like Quest Protein Bars, iForce Nutrition, Iron Mag Labs, and more. Check out Orbit's daily deals for special insane blowout prices. Log on to the Orbit Nutrition Forum and get feedback about the products you're shopping for and get an additional 5% off using the coupon code SHR5. Orbit Nutrition. Fast, reliable, competitive, international. Why shop anywhere else?
Never before has an anti-estrogen been so powerful. The triazole formula is built on a potent all-natural aromatase inhibitor called Pizole, which has been shown in clinical trial to be as effective as a leading prescription aromatase inhibitor. Pizole works in concert with the rest of the triazole formula to control estrogen while simultaneously boosting testosterone significantly. In fact, one of triazole's testers had a 120% increase in total testosterone and a 257% increase in free testosterone. Triazole is available at bodybuilding.com, NutriPlanet.com, or where finest supplements are sold. For more information, check out GetDS.com.
AnabolicMinds.com is the premier website for credible information on building muscle, burning fat, supplementation, and more. With over 100,000 active registered members and over 2.5 million posts, it's one of the largest communities on the internet to get help and answers to your question. It's also the place that the official Superhuman Radio Forum is hosted. Visit AnabolicMinds.com today and get into the action. AnabolicMinds.com. Learn, teach, lead.
You basically live life thanks to vitamin D. It affects every type of cell and tissue in your body. This is the reason optimizing your vitamin D blood level is essential for healthy living. The most efficient way to optimize your blood level is to take the perfect dose. And the most cost-effective way to determine the perfect dose is through vitamin D blood testing. The vitamin D test for Superhuman Radio is only $30, $17 cheaper than the lowest member price. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Life Extension banner ad to order.
Jumping high. Left and more. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back. We're talking with Dr. Mark Weisskopf. We're talking about air pollution's effect on the nervous system. Dr. Weisskopf, one of the things that I spoke about in the earlier segment with Dr. Gregory Willenis was, you know, do we see these effects in Europe versus the United States comparatively? We know that they drive fewer cars. And he raised the issue that, yes, while they drive fewer cars, they drive diesel cars. And in fact, your research implicates diesel fuels as being perhaps the worst offenders. Is that true?
That certainly was one of the pollutants that came up as sort of a top hit in what we were finding, yes. And I would say that there's some other, couple of other studies out of California that have also tried to, or sort of linked towards some traffic-related pollutant as well.
So does diesel fuel contain different things, or is it because it's predominantly unburned the way petrol, gasoline is pretty much burned, and we're getting, you know, this, all of these burnt up particulate coming out of the tailpipe, where with diesel fuel you've got this almost greasy, oily mist that comes out?
So I should say first that it's a sort of diesel particulate matter, any kind of particulate matter, is a lot of stuff in it. So we don't actually know, even if we have a good signal with something like that, it's often hard to pinpoint what specific aspect of it, since it's a bit of a mixture, is most relevant. I should also say, though, that especially in Europe, with their moving a lot more to diesel fuel, they tend to have more advanced engines that burn better and have cleaner diesel that are coming out there than we have here. But again, as I say, I don't, at this stage, we're certainly not at the point to be able to say what particular aspect it is. And in fact, I would say that even with the diesel particulate matter, you know, we had several signals that looked promising in terms of having a possible relation with autism in our work. And I think there's more work to be done to really even isolate whether it's the diesel particulate matter versus one of the other aspects we were looking at.
Say other aspects, are we talking about also fossil fuels being burned by cars, or are we talking about industrial pollutants?
Both, really. So, you know, we're talking about metals like, you know, lead and manganese and things like that, and we're talking about solvents like methylene chloride. So the problem a little bit in what we've done is that there's almost too much there to tease out any specific one or set of ones that may be driving what we're seeing most. So we have other ways to try and get at that, and I think one of the sort of exciting things for this research right now is that I think it's actually advancing much more than it, you know, rapidly than it has in the past. So I think there's several studies coming along that will provide much more solid data on trying to get at what particular aspects in the air or wherever a mother might be getting exposed to them from would be potentially responsible for this.
So do you think that it would be a responsible thing for an expecting mom to wear one of those surgical masks to kind of try to filter some of the particulate matter out of what she's breathing, or is that useless? Those things are these particles are so small they just get sucked right through that thing.
Well, I'm not totally up on it, the performance of those things. My general understanding is that the sort of simple ones you buy in a store, you know, it's not just going through it; it's kind of going through the sides of it. I would say, as far as autism goes, you know, we're still sort of early days. I mean, you know, we are clearly seeing something here, and there are several studies that are coalescing around something about air pollution. I think we have more work in front of us to really nail it down, but as Dr. Valenius probably spoke about, you know, there are certainly plenty of other health effects of air pollution that we would want to sort of avoid. I don't know that wearing one of those masks is going to help tremendously unless you're in a really, really dirty zone, but certainly trying to limit to the best one can't hurt.
Yeah, because I have this suspicion that one of your colleagues is going to publish a study in the next year or two saying that the inflammation caused by air pollution also contributes to insulin resistance. It just makes perfect sense to me that, you know, when we look at this perfect storm that we're living in, you know, we've pooped in the water, we've pooped in the air, our food is poop. It's like everything that we've done so far has led us to this point in time where we are just really being assaulted on all levels. And the rate of insulin resistance out there today, there's even some evidence that exposure to 1.5 gigahertz and above RF, which comes from everybody's iPhone and so on, can cause spontaneous insulin resistance on a cellular level. We live in not just an obesogenic world today. We live in an insulin resistance-ogenic world as well. And I'm waiting for somebody to say, well, guess what? Another thing is those metals get into your cells and they cause the cells to become deranged and they don't respond to insulin the way they're supposed to.
Right, right. Well, it's certainly not, I guess, out of the question, and we're learning new things all the time about what this stuff can do and new ways that it can get into the body and into the brain, so we definitely need to be exploring all possibilities of this, yeah.
Since you do this kind of research, does it concern you and about you and your family and where you live, and have you, you know, do you take any type of precautions personally?
I mean, I wouldn't say overt cautions, but do I want to sort of avoid my kids playing, you know, in traffic polluted areas? Absolutely. Get them out in green space and, you know, breathing clean air. I think, that's definitely true. We live in a practical world too, and obviously we have to do what we have to do, but, I think it's certainly worth thinking about and thinking about, you know, working in the most healthy environment and playing in the most healthy environment. And part of that is pollution. There's no question. And, you know, doing also on a sort of local community level, what one can do to reduce these things is very worthwhile.
You know, I asked Dr. Wilenius this as well. I wrote an article related to a research paper that was published back in 2010 that implicated the particulate matter and air pollution to a acute rise in blood pressure. And mm-hmm. I said, where you do your cardio is probably more important than whether you do cardio. Because I in the paper, in the article, I said, if you're one of these people who likes to run on a very, very busy roadway and you're breathing in all that pollution at a point in time where your body is undergoing a phenomenon called vascular density, which means that all the peripheral blood vessels are dilated and pumping, and you're delivering this poison that you're breathing in to every of all the far reaches of your body. This is the worst thing you can do. And I asked Dr. Wilenius what he thought of that. Like, people who do cardio on really busy roadways, is the value of exercise, does that mitigate the danger of breathing in so much more at a hyper rate of this stuff, or should you not do cardio on busy roadways?
Well, it's very interesting you say that. I led a symposium last year at a conference on air pollution and neurological effects, and one of the reports was out of Belgium, and they were doing both human and animal work looking at sort of brain benefits of physical activity, and basically the story that they had was very interesting, and it essentially said that exactly what you're saying. So if you had people or animals, and they could look at different aspects of brain health, that were exercising, there were beneficial effects of the exercise, but if they were doing that on the roadways in higher pollution areas versus clean rooms where they were monitoring sort of levels of these things, essentially they canceled each other out. So if you were doing the beneficial physical activity in a high pollution zone, you were not getting the benefits of the physical activity.
I think you're absolutely
right. There is something to that, yes.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Because just applying critical thinking, you know what I mean? It's like you're breathing this
absolutely.
Stuff in right, as it's coming out of the tailpipes, and you're doing it at a time where your heart rate is elevated, you're pumping more blood, you're pumping it to more areas, you're breathing deeper. It's like if you wanted to get the most pollution you could, this is what you would do.
That's right. Yeah, absolutely. There's something to that.
So what would you hope, obviously, we have to be cautious in this day and age because, the stress caused by worrying could be more damaging to a developing fetus, than maybe some of these things that we talk about. What would you hope that both clinicians and lay people take away from your research on, pollution and, pregnancy?
Well, let me just first say that you raise a very interesting point, because I actually have another line of work we could do another show on about exactly that, about stress and different aspects of that on the mother and also risk of autism in the child. So I do think that is a big issue.
Right.
I mean, at this stage, I really think that what I'm hoping, certainly clinicians and parents, I think parents are more onto this necessarily than the medical community as a whole, but certainly that, you know, we do need to be paying more attention to the environmental side of things. Genetics is clearly a huge driver, and we've done a lot of work, and we should continue to do a lot of work on that, because it's obviously going to be important. But we really need to start considering the environment more heavily, and I think that is to some degree happening, but more and more people have to sort of get on board with that so we can get a full picture of this. You know, it's sort of early days for this environmental research. I think the types of research are getting stronger and better, so I think this will progress more rapidly. But the more people are aware that, you know, there seems to be something there and we need to figure out what that is, for understanding sort of the development of autism and then potentially mechanistic stuff if we can figure out what's happening, but also just from a public health perspective, that these are things that we have, you know, possibilities of changing or avoiding either on a public level or a private level. And so they're important things to understand.
I think that it would not be zealot-like for a mom to consider, a mom who lives in an area where, you know, you own a home already, there's a main thoroughfare, a highway, you know, just behind your home, to keep the windows closed, run the air conditioner as often as possible, and more importantly, when you go out, to try to find some sort of, I don't know about a breathing apparatus. I'm not saying like a gas mask, but something that I'm sure there's something on the internet that's designed to remove particulate matter, just the way we have filters that remove this stuff from our water. And I think that, you know, if you take this seriously, and I think it deserves to be taken seriously. I don't think this is like, oh, come on, you're overreacting now, Carl. You know, forget about autism for a second. Let's say the linkage to autism is minuscule. We don't know what the other damning effects of breathing pollution in, and delivering it through the umbilical cord to this forming fetus is. And we won't know for probably decades from now as more thorough research is being done and we accumulate more information from the real population. This is one of those critical thinking skills of mine. I say, you know what? If you can't move, then you need to be more aware of the quality of the air, that you're breathing. Right. That almost rhymes. How do you like that one? So,
yeah. That's good. Yeah. No, I mean, I think that's generally right. I guess my caution would be two different cautions. One is certainly understanding the types of things you're going to get into to avoid the pollutants. You know, how well do they really work? What's being done? And the second somewhat cautionary tale is that, you know, a lot of, for example, even our work, it's modeling outdoor air pollutants, right? But a lot of what you're exposed to is actually indoor pollutants, and those can in fact differ greatly. And so, especially these early days when we haven't sort of nailed down the exact ingredient here, so to speak, you know, there are things that are much higher in indoor air than outdoor air, and things off gas from furniture, from TV sets, you know, that the plastics in them. And we don't know a whole lot about what those do either. So one, you know, runs the potential risk of shutting the window to keep the outdoor stuff out and then keeping all the indoor stuff in. And if that's the bad stuff, then you're in trouble. I don't mean to sort of scare people.
No.
There's this kind of trading one thing you do know for something you don't know.
Well, we've talked about, I think it was called Silver Light, which is a flame retardant that California outlawed several years ago. Well, that was one of the things that was found. Flame retardants were found in umbilical cord blood.
Right, yeah. Those scientific name is polybrominated diphenyl ethers. And, yes, they will off-gas from sort of plastics, particularly in the U.S. because they're fire-resistant. So a lot of our codes require, essentially, a certain level of fire resistance, and so they were used pretty heavily. And there's a lot of work going on now as to what health effects those potentially have.
Yes, and those don't come from the tailpipes of cars.
that's
coming.
Right.
That's coming from that little pillow that you rest your head on at night.
Exactly. So,
all right, listen, I want to thank you, Dr. Weisskopf, for coming on and talking about this a very, very important topic.
Thank you for having me.
Pleasure. Take care. All right, so stay tuned. We got one other thing I want to talk about when we come back. We'll be right back.
Train hard. You push the limits of your body every day, and sometimes pain pushes back. Now silence your pain with Phoenix Kinetic Cream. Kinetic Cream is made using a perfect blend of natural ingredients and reduces inflammation and shuts down pain with its very first use. Listen to what one user said about Phoenix Kinetic Cream.
Training made me ache. My back, my shoulders, even my elbows. I rub Kinetic Cream on my shoulders, and in minutes, I could feel the pain go away, not covered up by that freezing feeling like other creams. The pain was gone.
You can learn more about Kinetic Cream by visiting PhoenixBioPerformance.com. Don't let pain slow you down. Rise above the ashes with Phoenix Kinetic Cream. That's PhoenixBioPerformance.com.
Toothpaste is loaded with toxic chemicals. That's why I use Aura MD. Aura MD is a natural dental care product that is made from botanical oils that promotes healthy oral microbiome while destroying dangerous bacteria that lead to oral health problems. It does not contain fluoride, detergents, surfactants, or any other chemicals. Best of all, it leaves your breath smelling so good, people will comment about it. Right now, you can get a buy one, get one free of Aura MD by going to superhumanradio.com and clicking the Aura MD banner ad. I won't ever use anything else but Aura MD, and neither should you.
People who want the best whey protein in the world turn to WhayNaturalUSA.com. Whey Natural USA produces the only whey protein from grass pasture-fed cows raised right here in the USA. You cannot get the same quality whey protein anywhere else, period. Whey Natural USA is cold-processed through the patented Chill-Rite process, so all the undenatured fractions of whey stay intact. Just pure grass pasture-fed whey in all its natural glory. Go to WhayNaturalUSA.com today and find out what you've been missing. Whey Natural USA. BCAA.com.
Get a free jug of BCAA Extended Performance. That's a $26 freebie when you buy Muscle Gauge Nutrition's Intense, the safest, most effective pre-workout alternative to DMAA. Intense is designed to quickly boost focused energy in a great-tasting formula free of aspartame or ACE-K. Only half the caffeine of top-selling concentrated pre-workout formulas on the market. Intense delivers unparalleled mental focus and energy to power your workouts. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Intense banner ad and use coupon code SUPER. That's S-U-P-E-R. Electronic muscle stimulation is state-of-the-art for pain management and muscle recovery. Now from ABC Medical comes the Pain Pod. Pain Pod is a professional strength EMS unit and provides 12 therapeutic modes and 20 intensity settings. It comes with everything you need. Small, convenient, rechargeable, and portable. But make no mistake, Pain Pod delivers commercial-grade strength for immediate pain relief. The Pain Pod normally sells for $349, but for a limited time, the Superhuman Nation can get the Pain Pod for only $200, including shipping. Pain Pod comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Pain Pod banner ad today to learn more. Power Block dumbbells can replace up to 55 pairs of dumbbells in the space of just one pair, and they come in all sizes to meet the needs of all lifters, as small as 2.5 to 20 pounds per hand, all the way up to 175 pounds per hand, and everything in between. Check out the new Power Block barbells that turn your Power Block dumbbells into barbells in seconds, replacing up to 45 barbells. Or try the new kettlebell handle to convert Power Block dumbbells to kettlebells. Call 800-651-1937 or click the banner ad on superhumanradio.com for a free brochure.
Spit that out right now. This is the Superhuman Channel.
Welcome back. Tomorrow's show is going to be a great show. Obviously, during the first hour, we're going to have the Blueprint Power Hour with Rob Regish, which is a big favorite of everybody's. Second hour, we're going to be joined by Marisol Lara. She is an IFBB pro bikini competitor who has risen into the limelight like a shooting star. And it's all because of her dedication. I've seen before and after pictures of her, and what she has done is just amazing. So we're going to have her on tomorrow for the ladies out there to talk about what it takes to have that level of dedication, how you have to change your life. Do your friends go with you or don't they? Do your family support you or don't they? It's going to be a really interesting discussion because so many of us have desires to reach certain goals. I don't care what they are. Maybe they're not being a bikini competitor. Maybe it's making it to a regional or a local CrossFit game. Maybe it's to compete in powerlifting. But all of these things require the same amount of effort, regardless of what they are, the same amount of dedication, regardless of what they are. Some people aren't willing to put the dedication in. They can, but they just don't. They get derailed over and over again for whatever reasons. So we're going to talk to Marisol tomorrow, and we're going to find out how heroic of an effort was it for her to do the things that she did that literally catapulted her right into the IFBB Pro card that she now has. And I promise you it'll be an interesting discussion for both men and women. Also want to remind you that Livon Labs has their glutathione supplement. For those of you who are taking the vitamin C and the vitamin B complex, which is the Altrient, now Livon Labs cocktail, the glutathione supplement is a fantastic addition to this. It's a great way to get glutathione into the body. It's a better way than infusion, and it's a very, very reasonably priced supplement, especially when you buy them all three together. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Livon Labs glutathione banner ad today to learn more. Okay, don't forget, tune in tomorrow. It's going to be a great show. We'll see you then.
This is the Superhuman Channel. Evolution just got kicked up a notch.